Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line Podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. Of course, you know it's Thursday. Double R. Ramsey, how are you?
Man, if I was any better, I'd be sitting in a duck blind. Then again, I've been in a lot of duck blinds since January. Maybe I wouldn't. Maybe I'd be sitting on the beach somewhere drinking a Mai Tai and watching the waves come in. But I'm good, Rocky. I'm enjoying the spring weather in Mississippi, and I'm really enjoying not being in an airplane or a duck camp or something right now. I'm being home, my family, and everything's good. Man, happy to be here.
Duck season somewhere. Where would it be duck season right now?
Where is it duck season? There's snow goose season going on. It's duck season in southern Australia right now. In the southern Australian province, it's duck season. Here in about a month, it opens up in New Zealand. Here in mid-April, formally, it opens in South America. So yeah, it's duck season somewhere. And
I love that. I love that saying from Get Duck. It's duck season somewhere. It always is.
I never will forget, you know, it dawned on me one time. I was bent over going to work, man. I used to work for the federal government, and I really did not like that job. But I was just a work like everybody else, you know. And I remember one morning just lacing up my shoes to leave, you know, go to work. And I just remember thinking, you know, it's duck season somewhere. Somewhere today, right now, it's duck season. And it is, man. I mean, it's a big world out there still, Rocky, and there's duck season somewhere. You know, southern hemisphere, northern hemisphere, and we've got a, you know, look, I'm home until mid to late May. I may have to go to Russia mid-May, host a capercaillie hunt, but after that, I'm home until the last week of May. And then it gets busy again. I'll be home a little bit in June, and looks like I'm gonna be down in Argentina chasing around for a long, long time again, and it's crowding my show schedule. So I'm gonna actually as late right now. I'm probably going to leave Argentina and fly straight to Houston, meet Forrest, who will bring the booth over, and we'll set up a booth and do a couple of shows there in Houston and Dallas. But right now, I'm good. The phones are ringing. Business is good. You know, it's one of those little lulls in our business, too. Mexico's over with. Azerbaijan's over with. Right this very minute, we have no clients in travel status. But between selling hunts from Mexico, which is red hot right now, and Argentina, last-minute Argentina goers, which is still steady, you know, it's just phone calls from clients getting ready for their upcoming trips. And it's going to be Argentina this year is going to be a doozy. Just trust me, it's going to be epic. Last year was dry in a lot of areas, and wetlands need that dry period to oxidize soils and get vegetation growth. And now it's wet, and it's the reports we're hearing from our operators are nothing short of epic. It's just as good as it's ever been. And so we're real fired up about that. But that's where I'm at. Hey, change of subject. I saw something on the internet last night that Rocky, it just absolutely one of the best, very best things I've seen on the internet in a long, long time. I mean, really and truly. And I remember the executive producer of Blood Origins came to Willow Break, and we filmed. I remember him telling me about this story, and I've been waiting to see it. But yesterday was the launch of a Blood Origins episode. They entitled it called Uncharted Waters, and it was different. It involved three young ladies I know: Ashton Stockwell, Kara Harper, Kim Rogers, and it was so good. If you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen it, if you've got a child, if you've got friends, if you've got a dead-in-law that's even thinking about duck hunting, please show them that episode. Rocky, you asked me a while back. You know, I remember I was in Mexico. You asked me about how people can get into this industry. Well, you know, it ain't for everybody. But if you want to get it, if you want to get into the hunting industry, do what these three young ladies just did. Tell a story. Bring something of that value to the listeners. And what got me is I've met these ladies. I know them. I hunted with Kara. Forrest and I both got to hunt with her with Prairie Rock Outfitters in Nebraska this year. She's on the staff up there. And this, and I hope their list is wrong. I hope you don't take me wrong what I'm about to say. These aren't girls that hunt. These aren't girls that just decide to go hunting like we all see in social media. These are hunters. All three of them are hunters. They're successful. They're successful in business. They're successful in life. They're successful in brand building. And when you put a duck call in their hands, when they climb into a duck blind, they're duck hunters. And that was the message that so resonated with me when I watched the first time, the second time, and third time this video, Uncharted Waters. It absolutely resonated with me that they were not speaking from any perspective of gender. They were speaking as duck hunters. And their message is very profound. They accomplished to me as ambassadors for hunting. The message I heard them say, they said in a way that a guy like me will never be able to say. I don't think you'd be able to say it, Rocky. I don't think Bill or Bradley. I don't think any of us. I don't think any of us would be able to say this in a way that they communicated the message. And how inviting it was. I wanted to share it with every child I knew. I wanted to share it with my own daughter, with my wife. I wanted them to hear this message. Allison Cruz was on the podcast back in September, and she had a very, very good message, speaking from her perspective. And I haven't seen that in a long, long time, and I would encourage everybody to watch it because, you know, it hit the nail square on the head of the message that is incumbent on all of us hunters to be speaking right now. I'm so sick of the drama online. So sick of it. Corn, timber, out of state, blah, 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 blah. We're a bunch of dang internet hunters just bickering and culling the ranks. Along come three real hunters. They just have this inviting message that invites everybody into the fold. Every child, every man, every person. I think it resonates with every listener. You know what they said, and it's such a strong message. I think it's what we all ought to be doing. If you're one of them people out there that want to get a toehold, you think in the outdoor industry, I think you're gonna be disappointed once you wake up and realize it's just a job. But there you go, right there. That's it, right there. Look at that video and communicate to people that message. Bring that message and bring that positivity and bring it in a way that transcends gender and ages and biases. Put that message out there, and I promise you, it'll come back on you. You'll be where you want to be soon enough. And I applaud them, Rocky. I hope, golly, what a great, you know, I just, there's so much cynicism on the internet, and all of a sudden to flip on this video and see that, wow, I'm blown away. And I applaud them all, man. They are such good people. All of them are just very good people, and have done very, very well. But they communicated it in a way I could never communicate that message, and I
don't know Kara
matters for this sport.
I don't know. I do know Kara.
I got to hear a Kara story in a duck blind in Nebraska. Kara is from Arkansas, and you know, whereas I took my two little boys, Forrest and Duncan, duck hunting when they were babies, she went with her daddy. You know, she grew up duck hunting. You know, and just like we all did, and you know, and you know, I've heard a lot of, you know, of course I've known Ashton's fiance, TJ Mallett. I've known him since he was 9th or 10th grade back in the old MS Duck days. You know, I never forget one time we had a little group gathering at a pizza joint in Jackson, and TJ and his daddy showed up. We all thought his daddy was you know,
Jeff
was the personality. It was TJ, you know, and man, he used to come to all the gatherings we had. We duck hunted together. I mean, just I've known him since he was a young man, and now he's a very successful duck guide in Canada and also Arkansas, and I've never hunted with their operation yet. I'd love to, especially the Arkansas flooded timber, which I've heard is excellent. But from what I've heard from a lot of friends and a lot of mutual friends that know each other, and some of my own clients that have hunted with them, you know, Ashton is you know, she is as instrumental to their core mission with what they're doing as my wife Anita is with Get Ducks. Because folks, I'm gonna tell you right now, Get Ducks, the business would not exist without Anita. You know, she is truly the brains of the operation, brings a lot of the good stuff, the important stuff to the table. And I've just heard, you know, that they have that same partnership. They're real hunters, you know what I'm saying?
Forget the gender,
real hunters.
Ashton probably beats TJ out of bed some mornings. Dude, she's a freaking killer. She loves it.
She is. She is. That's good. I get to keep up with them in social media. But, you know, I hunted with Kara. And her husband Grant, and they are both fine people, good people, and they're young. She's probably the youngest of the three of those ladies that roam the uncharted waters, but just a really, really nice girl. She is got her feet up under her real good in this industry. She's very. What gets me is, you know, we've talked about this in the past. I've heard it talked about in other podcasts and duck blinds and everywhere else, when you start talking about these Insta celebrities. You know what I'm saying? And you know, there's so many of them, but it's just anytime you get to meet and be in the presence of a very credible ambassador that's involved with industry and getting a message out of hunting. Because I don't care what you think. I don't care where you hunt. We need more hunters. It's all about, and I don't mean it's about selling merchandise, but it is about selling merchandise, because that is the economy that keeps hunting in America politically relevant. Take it from somebody, Rocky, that has been to Netherlands and has been to Australia. We don't want to become economically irrelevant in the United States of America, because when we do, good old days are over. There will not be hunting like you think there is. And right now, it's all about the money. People say, oh, it's all about the money. Yeah, it's all about the money. You know what I'm saying? But it's all about hunters and hunting and the tradition and bringing recruits into it. We're losing recruits. You know what I'm saying? And so many of us are old and biased. You know, I don't wear face paint. I don't care if you do or not. But, you know, we're old. We're biased. We're stuck in our old ways. And to see, it's just so positive. That these are the kind of people that are representing the future of hunting, and they're not the only ones. There's Haley Hernandez down in Louisiana, who could fit right in with that bunch. She is a real hunter and a very, very very good ambassador for hunting. Denisha Larson over in Georgia, same way. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I love knowing those kinds of people with that kind of voice that brings a very credible message to hunters and the people that are considering hunting, you know, getting into it. One of the best things I've heard Spencer Hofford say in his podcast. I mean, it's a message that drives home, and I kind of heard it when these ladies were talking about calling. Call. You think every duck in the world sounds the same, sounds like a Stuttgart calling routine, you're wrong. They don't. They make quacks, and they all got lisp and funny sounds and everything else. Call. Learn to call. Don't be scared to call. Don't beat up on newbies that are learning to call. They got to learn to call. You can't do that in your den. You got to do it out in the duck blind. Call. Be yourself. Get into this sport. Figure it out. Learn it. And be a hunter. Like these young ladies and like a lot of other people. That's just that simple. We need more hunters. Now. But anyway, I'll run on and talk about that forever because that was a very, very, very good production. And everybody should take the time to watch it, share it, make sure people that need to see it. Because, my hat's off to the ladies. They did a very, very good job with that.
That's the thing that I don't get about the – see, if I'm picking up the phone as an outdoor company and I need ladies to market my brand, I'm calling Ashton. I'm calling Kara. I'm calling Kim. Jess, Denisha.
Haley,
I'm calling those.
Right.
I'm not calling the one. Yeah, they may have a million followers on their Instagram, but 9 out of 10 pictures are them half naked. I'm not calling those girls.
They ain't selling product. No. That's right. You know?
No. And, there's some daddy issues there. You're posting 9 out of 10 pictures in your bikini showing your boobies off. 9 times out of 10, it's a daddy problem. They're selling themselves for some attention.
Like a lot of duck hunters I know, I use what works for me. I've experimented with everything, and I've gravitated toward what I like, what works for me, may not work for you. You may not like it. I like it. You know what I'm saying, we get a little lost in noise. I mean, you know, we get a little lost in the noise of. If you're in the outdoor industry, if you're promoting a message, if you're telling a story, if you're, you know, because you want more people to see it. If it's a good message like theirs, you want more people to see it. But, you know, we don't need to get too lost in the noise of look, there's a lot to be said. What I'm trying to say is there's a lot to be said for telling a good story without muddying the waters with sponsor intervention. You know, I mean, let's just tell a good story. And that is a... Anyway, why wouldn't you? Why would you go to an Insta celebrity that is looks like a centerfold in her media versus going to somebody credible that is a hunter that can intelligently speak to hunters or to young hunters? I mean, you want to talk about an encouraging message. If I was the guy, and I was the guy one day, people, if I was the guy that didn't really know what a hen gadwall looked like when the dog brought it in, man, I'd like to hear their message. They encouraged me to become, to figure out what it is through experience. Because, you know, guys, all of us started somewhere. All of us did. We all started somewhere. You know, and the great thing about hunting is just is improving it and figuring out what works and figuring out what doesn't work. It's always a ball game. It's always like baseball. It's a game of errors. There's a lot of variables besides our skill set and those errors we try to prevent that win or lose the game. It's what it is. But we keep digging. We keep doing better. We keep trying to figure out something better, you know, a technique. That's the whole adventure, man. That's the whole process. You know, it's so worth it. You know, just to go through that process. But in a day and age, Rocky, you just got to admit, in a day and freaking age where everybody on the internet, every other thread is intimidating or discouraging people from asking questions. Or doing something or hunting somewhere, boom, here comes this video inviting everybody to be a real duck hunter. No matter their gender,
it was good.
their ability. It was good. The message was so good. It was spot on. And
I don't want this to come across in the wrong way. I thought that, you know, Blood Origin is doing the same thing that we're trying to do here at this podcast. Tell good stories of good people that have been successful, but have had, you know, that have a great story to go along with that. I will say, it's not a knock on them, but in the past, they could have been done a lot better. Some of the videos that they put out, and maybe they've learned from that. But I will say this, they totally redeemed themselves yesterday with that one.
Yeah.
That is one of the best ones when it comes to a webisodic series episode. That's one of the best I've ever seen. They did a great job with that episode.
Blood Origin. And I'm talking Robbie Kroger. Robbie Kroger is the brainchild of Blood Origins. Very, very interesting person. Very knowledgeable. I've met him several times. We've had several times I've met him. I've got to hear a lot of his own personal story. Why at the emotional level hunting is so important to him. Same reason it's so important to you. Same reason when your podcast people come on board, it doesn't start with last week's duck hunt. It starts with their childhood. Starts with, and always, always, their mama or their daddy or their granddaddy and their kids or an uncle or a family friend. It's tradition. And Robbie, you know, I'll tell you the story. I did a little interview with Robbie back during duck season, and man, the guy is very intuitive. He's on the outside of his subject looking in, like a book. He opens a cover, and when I met with him, he helped me articulate something that had been there forever that I just never articulated that way. And I've said it a million times, I don't collect birds. I chase birds, and I'm compelled by the places, those new species or new locations. You know, I'm compelled by the process from where it takes me. To a remote marsh in Azerbaijan, to a remote marsh in Argentina, to 16,000 foot elevation in the Andes Mountain chasing Andean geese, to below sea level in the Netherlands chasing a barnacle goose, to the next place, to South Africa, to Australia, the Red Gum Swamp, to all these places. That's what gets me. And Rocky Simple, not Rocky, Robbie's succinct take on it all was because you're a collector of experiences, not birds. And he nailed it. I'm a collector of experiences. That's what makes me tick. I never articulated it that way. You know, and you want to talk about my humble opinion, my heartfelt, not trying to sell merchandise opinion. You know, well all this merchandise industry, Rocky, all this merchandise everybody's trying to sell to duck hunters, is contingent upon hunters and the continuance of hunting. And I know, I see the look on people's face when I say it in public across the table from somebody. People roll their eyes or start thinking, what do you mean hunting's going to end in America? It could never end in America. Baloney. Don't deceive yourself. Hunting universally is hanging by a thread. I'm telling you. I see it everywhere, every country I've been to, hunting is hanging by a thread. There are many people and a lot of people with a lot of money, throwing money at politicians, governments, government agencies worldwide that are undermining what you and I know as hunting. And I wish I had more disposable income as a business put into Blood Origins and to put in to your podcast, Rocky, because these stories we're telling, what, you know, Robbie's angle with Blood Origins is the why I hunt. Do you notice? Never because of a pile of dead ducks. Every story is personal. And I think it's a very, very important message to get out. And I know that the world ain't beating his door down to hear this story told, but it should be. There should be funding to tell your story, Rocky. These stories that are airing out 5 days a week on End of Line podcast. You know, it shouldn't be you having to ask for money. It should be industry and non government conservation people coming to get this message out. Get it heard. Get it heard to a wider audience. And it's not the dead gum, you know. The hunters, and the problem with us, our messages and our message delivery is we're the preacher preaching to the choir. Hunting magazines, hunting podcasts, hunting oriented shows, telling hunting stories to hunters. That don't matter. Forget the 10% out here that is against hunting. If somebody personally, I'm telling a story right now to a writer for an organization about anti-hunting, personal experiences, conflicts, people going ballistic in my face, death threats. I'm telling that story. Forget those people. Because you know what? You're never going to ever change their mind. You can eat every duck you've got. You can utilize it. We can make sewing needles out of the bones like the Indians did. It don't matter. Utilization is not the key. The fact that you derive enjoyment makes them unhappy. You want to make an anti-hunter happy? Quit killing animals. Period. That's how you make them happy. Forget them. We're not talking to them. You know who we're talking to? We're talking to the gray, mindless mass of societies, neither the hunter nor the anti-hunter. That's where this is going to be won. Getting the message to those people. That's where our tradition is going to continue in the future. And this podcast, Rocky, End of Line Podcast, I look forward to it. I enjoy meeting with you. I've discovered a lot about myself that I'd forgotten about or didn't know just in the last months we've been doing this story. And I gain a whole lot from listening to all of your podcasters. I love them all. Boy, Jeff Foley is fixing to tell a heck of a story. Radio coming up, heck of a story. All of them. Man, I listened to them and I learned something. Sure would like to get that message out to a wider audience. Much wider audience than just us hunters, just us duck hunters. It's very important. You know, and I'm speaking from my own observations around the world. Politicians don't care unless money's involved. You know, and that's my heartfelt thing. You know, that's what I felt through that latest Blood Origins, and that's why I feel so strongly and support so strongly End of the Line podcast and others. It's getting that message out. You know, we have got to build bridges amongst ourselves. We as a collection of people, the hunters, we're fractionalizing ourselves, and in doing so, we're losing ranks. We're losing ranks, and it's in some regards, it's selfish. Well, I don't want nobody else hunting that property. I want to kill them all. Well, that's selfish, Mister. There's enough ducks for everybody. I'm saying, and if there ain't, collectively, we exercise change, or we enforce change, or we induce change to get more ducks, to get more agricultural policies, to change regulations, management, whatever. Only collectively can we do that. At a united political voice can we do that. And you know what? It takes money. You better hope that pickabrand.com is selling the fire out of merchandise. I'm saying that's just how it is, in my opinion. Sorry about all that, right. Rocky. I just slid off the rails.
No. You actually led us into the next thing I want to talk about. So the Foles podcast yesterday. All right, so everybody knows that Foles came out against the flooded corn issue, which has been an emotional topic for a lot of waterfowlers this past season. It's been, you know, you're either usually no in the middle. I'm kind of in the middle on it. There's either strongly for, strongly against. Now, I don't want to argue today. I'm not saying that. I don't want to argue the case for or against it. Here's a couple of things I want to say. I want you to back me up on the history of what I'm about to say. Look, I think that you, in an effective management, habitat management program on any block of land, you have to have corn a part of your management program. Number one, everybody thinks that it's for feeding, to feed the ducks. Well, it's even a bigger one than that. Ducks use corn for shelter from predators, from the conditions. Look, a lot of people are saying that it's short-stopping ducks. The whole corn deal is short-stopping ducks. I don't think that it's short-stopping ducks in the years that we have weather to push them. Just hear me out on this. What's the number one thing that most people plant or have for sanctuary for waterfowl? What's the number one thing? Just one word. What is it usually?
My camp is coffee weed or willows is what the ducks tend to use to get up.
And see, that's what I would have used back in the day. A lot of people use corn in their sanctuary. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this arguing, you know, all these ducks are held up on this corn. So, you know what the number one problem in duck hunting right now is? Overpressure. And these ducks are going to the places where they're not feeling any pressure during the daytime, where they're not being shot at 60 days.
That's all over the place. I got a couple of thoughts, so just bear with me because they ain't directly connected. One, you don't know hunting pressure. I don't care where you hunt in America, Mississippi, my camp, your camp, public land. You don't know hunting pressure. Do you hunt a place like that big wetland we hunt over in Azerbaijan? We get there to the boat ramp, where all them little wood skiffs are located at 4:30 in the morning. Boom, you hear shots off in the distance. Pow, boom, ping, pow. Every guy you got's got a old school headlight. And buddy, they go to great pains. They might be driving a motorcycle that was built during the Eisenhower administration. It's a wonder it works. I ain't about to drive one. It might break or something fell on me when I'm going down the road. But old stuff, old boats that they're caulking with mud, push poles, whatever, you know, a 2.5 horsepower motor, you know, 20 years old, runs like a top, but nonetheless, you know what I'm saying? I mean, just them lights they got, baby. Nice light. Now, I don't mean these old LED made in Japan, cheap, you know, I'm not big old timey frog gigging like your papaw wore lights, like a Q-beam on their head. How they roll them things up and protect them when they ain't on their heads. And they're hunting 24/7 out in that market. They ain't baiting. They're hunting 24/7. Rocky.
But, all right, let me ask you this.
From the time the first duck shows up to the last duck leaves, season don't matter. These folks are hunting. And it's like Jake and I were talking, you know, the fact that we're even killing ducks, let alone in the decoys. Okay, now hold that thought. Let me say this right here. I was listening to that podcast yesterday. I neither agree nor disagree with what Jeff or anybody else says about corn up north. I'm going to say it right now. I just shrug it off. Because here's where I think we're all missing the picture. We're trying to identify something. Boom, here's the reason. Oh, I've heard the podcast about the Mojo. Ah, the Mojo killed all the super hens off in 1998. Maybe so. Ducks still come down south. Okay? There's a million different reasons, we all think. It's like, I remember this old joke I heard one time. Air Force communications from Air Force pilots to Air Force mechanics. I never forget, it was like a top 10, you know, funny things, you know, the pilot gets done flying and he writes something on the clipboard and the next day comes back and read, you know, what was fixed. And this is what I'm trying to say. Listen, pilot lands a fighter jet and he writes on the clipboard, something rattling in cockpit. Next day comes up and then the message from the mechanics is something tightened in cockpit. Okay? Now, I remember back at Mississippi State University, I took a wildlife course. Can't remember the name of it right now. Under Bruce Leopold. Bruce Leopold was a shitty, ended up becoming the dean of wildlife for a long time. Very, very smart man. Very good teacher. I had him for several courses there at Mississippi State University. And he was a statistician. Okay, this guy knew statistics inside out. He was an ecologist. Very smart man. He knew statistics. And I took him in this little course right here, and it wasn't a statistics course. It was a wildlife course. But we had to come home, and one of our homework assignments or whatever was some statistics. And I had to call a PhD student of his to kind of get a little help ciphering out what this deal was. It was like a multivariate equation. And at face value, you know, because he said he gave you some numbers, number of churches, number of light poles, number of murders for this community. And when you ran the little statistic that you learned in class to run, basically, statistically speaking, the more churches there are, the more murders there are. It was just plain as day. Well, golly, man, you know, who wants to live somewhere there's a bunch of churches? A bunch of Christians got killing people or something. It's kind of what, at face value, that graph would say to you. Well, that don't make sense, does it, Rocky? But you know what makes sense? When you plug in them all and you look at the big picture, churches, there's more churches per capita as people per capita go up. So the bigger city, Jackson, Mississippi, probably has more churches than Greenwood, Mississippi, than does Leland, Mississippi. So therefore, the more people you got compressed in a city boundary, the more murder rates increase. That's the answer. And all I'm trying to say in bringing that into it is corn, mojos, hunting pressure, water quality, water different. I mean, Rocky, there's a million different things that have changed since 1970. And then we still got just the totally random laws of the universe, like weather, like migration, like age ratio. I think that Delta waterfowl biologist made a very good point that, you know, having a preponderance of juvenile birds affects your hunting success up north and down south. And as somebody that's participated in the wing survey for the past 5 years, I know how to age and sex duck wings, and I don't write them down and matriculate them while I'm doing them, but while I'm cutting the wings up, stuffing all them envelopes, which takes a little bit of effort, you know, I do open them up, look, say, well, that's an adult. And, you know, just at a glance, I'd say that 20% of the birds I've shot in the south in the past few years were juveniles. The rest were adults, especially mallards. Man, I'd say that 90% of the mallards I killed, the very few, relatively few mallards I've killed in the last several years were juveniles. Were 90% adults. Okay, well, that's a good point. But see, my point is, Rocky, for us to point at one thing, corn. Oh, flood of corn. Nope, messing up everything. Okay. Well, you know what? I had a client one time hunting right there at the confluence of the Ohio and Mississippi rivers in Illinois, southern Illinois, in some of them big blue blood, rich clubs. I mean, boy, howdy. You know, man, the money they throw about. I mean, this guy himself was worth, had a decoy collection worth $10 million. That's that kind of club. And guess where they kill all their birds up there? They don't plant corn. They manage for smart weed. That's where they kill their ducks. Oh, maybe all the ducks ain't dying in corn after all. Heck yeah. Ducks are going to use that vertical structure for cover. Yeah, they're going to do it. Hunt pressure's going to keep them there. But you know a thought I had, because I ain't getting no younger. I try to exercise, do my little old man exercise to stay mobile and stay in good shape and whatnot. But I love to listen to these podcasts when I go bicycling. I go out there, you know, it's my time, and I'm listening, and I'm thinking, and the phone ain't ringing. If it does, I turn it off. Boom, I'm riding and listening. My time. Not your time or her time or their time. My time on that bicycle. Just out there humming around like an old man on a bicycle, listening to podcasts. And I heard that podcast yesterday and loved it. Good job, Jill. And, but, you know, I had a thought. I used to hunt over at Langill Lounge, and, in the good year, a lot of those pit blinds Pat had were in rice fields. That was a good year when it was in rice. The levees were good. The food was there. It just seemed to be better than a bean year every other year they rotated into. And I just had this thought, Rocky, bear with me, just one of many multivariables that could be affecting it. And I think I read or heard something you said about the quality of habitat changing between 1970 and now down south. Ask any old farmer down south when the ditches and creeks and everything overflowed and the farmer couldn't harvest those old generation one soybeans but could come back in spring and harvest them because they were still viable. Not like these Gen 4 or 5 or whatever they're planting now that sprout on the vine after been rained on twice. You know what I'm saying? Things have changed. And soybeans ain't great products anyway. It's like feed them Slim Fast. Fact. If it ain't being cooked, good protein's locked up, and they ain't getting much nutritional value out of it, but they'll eat it if it's available. That's a whole other discussion. But, you know, I had this thought. You know what else has changed since the good old days of the 70s and 80s is the snow goose population. Just throwing it out there. Hey, man, you know, anything goes. I'm throwing my idea. I just thought I had. You know what's changed? Since I was a little boy sitting in Greenville, Mississippi, watching billions of snow geese fly overhead heading for the coastal Louisiana and Texas, the fact that those populations have exploded. 20 years we've been shooting with reckless abandon, unplugged guns, electronic calls in the spring, conservation order. Congress had to come in and rewrite migratory bird laws to let us shoot these birds with reckless abandon, no limit. And we ain't put a dent in them. And they ain't. Land practices down in coastal Louisiana and Texas ain't the rice it used to be. Rice now is Arkansas, parts of Mississippi, further. The birds are holding up. And I can remember one of the most everlasting indelible thoughts I'll have of hunting at Langill Lounge was on Friday before the opener. And Thursday, the week before, we're out there throwing decoys and cleaning pits and pumping and doing things. Right, you know. That keeps a tight camp, son. But I never forget sitting out at dusk having a drink at an open pecan tree by the camp house and watching the entire red sunset obliterated with snow geese. They were usually going over to Brits, coming out of Brits where the rice was. It was good because they stomped down the rice double, you know, make openings for ducks. It was bad because they were eating rice for ducks. Now, I'm just saying, is it possible that between zero grade and clean farming practices and Roundup ready crops and water management and a million upon a million more snow geese now eating rice before the ducks show up, is it possible we don't got the quality habitat down south we used to have?
Well, I think number one is habitat driven. Ramsey, just a second. My phone's about to die before we have to end this podcast. I don't think that people understand Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana deltas, what it was like in 1985, where every ditch had grass growing up on it, and with every inch rain, there was a pothole out in the field filled with water and thousands, hundreds of ducks sitting on it. People don't understand that concept. And, man, you walked up and knocked on a door, said, hey, can I go hunt your pothole that's got water in it for the next couple of days? Shoot, yeah, man. You couldn't lease a hole, really, back then. The hole, man, think about the thousands, hundreds of thousands of acres in the South Delta where you're sitting today, where y'all's camp is, that the habitat loss there is coming back now, but for years it's been gone.
300,000 acres, 300 nearly contiguous thousand acres of marginal farmland that if it wasn't flooded, it would get flash water in it during heavy storm during duck season because it was in soybeans or whatever else back in the 60s and 70s. You know what I'm saying? Or it'd get flooded because all the, you know, it is marginal farm ground prone to flood during duck season is now 300,000 acres is now sitting in 5 to 30-year-old hardwood plantations that are rife with buck brush, and a duck couldn't get to that water if he tried. Now, the 20, 30 years, maybe it'll open up, be some nice flooded timber. Remains to be seen. You know what I'm saying? 300,000 flood-prone acres are now sitting in hardwoods.
Man, I'll tell you this. In 1998, when I first became a guide, the Delta, the Central Delta right there around Greenwood was rich with food. Now, you fast forward to 2016, 2017, when I walked away, you know, Will, Troy, Brad, different people that, you know, we would sit on my front porch and or down at Will's and say, you know, what is it here for them to eat? Mud? It looks like the surface of the moon on a regular year. You're getting your corn and your beans out so early that you work this land back up and it's nothing but a mud pie.
Mm-hmm. And things change, Rocky.
What is it there for them to eat?
You know, things change. Wetlands change. Wetlands are dynamic. And the whole dynamic process, I'm sorry, but ecological time to the universe, time to Earth is much, much bigger and much grander and much different in a whole lot slower pace than the span of a human lifetime or hunting career. I'm just sitting here thinking of the duck hole that you shot your first duck in, that story. What changed? Why the ducks quit coming? Did it seal thin? Did the soils not oxidize? Did some water quality change? Anything could have changed because you know, Cypress breaks by God's design. Old river runs are made to silt in. You know what I'm saying? That's just the laws of nature. They silt in. Things change usually. Usually that's just the natural progression. And to look at a kind of a man-made induced version of that, look at Hillside Refuge. It has filled in about 20 or 30 years quicker, silted in and filled in, and they've reforested areas of it, and they've trees have become naturally established on big, big portions of it about 30 years ahead of schedule. In another 10, 15, 20 years, it's not going to be a duck hole. It's going to be some great deer and rabbit habitat. That was the whole design of it. Well, that's really no different than any cypress break on Earth. A lot of these old river runs just silt in, period. And especially when we start doing agriculture and construction and everything around them, they silt in. It's just the laws of nature. Things change. You know, one of the coolest things I ever read, slap in the face, was Delta Wildlife, which is the wildlife component of Delta Council up there in Stoneville, Mississippi. Trey and those guys put out some literature one time, maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. And they got to looking at data and distribution of waterfowl utilization in the Delta counts, winter count, midwinter waterfowl counts. And they actually reached out to Fish and Wildlife and Ducks Unlimited, everybody else, and said, is this really what we think it is? Yeah. There's been years that number of waterfowl in Mississippi has actually increased, historically was. It's more ducks than what it used to be. But distribution of those ducks has changed drastically. Those ducks are most heavily concentrated where there's still a lot of water on the landscape. And you know what?
A lot of food.
Ain't it. south. Well, it is right now. It's a freaking ocean down there because they need to build that pump. But it ain't during a normal year. It's a whole lot of hardwood buck vine thicket. It used to be soybeans until about the 60s, 70s. It was cleared. So, you know, really and truly, you think about, I mean, if you think about it, maybe down there in the extreme south delta up against Redwood, Vicksburg up in the Marys right there, I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows. How many ducks used those areas back in the 30s and 40s? How many ducks were on Willowbrook back in the 30s and 40s when it was all marginal hardwood, swamp wood? Probably very dang few, Rocky. It wasn't until they came in and USDA incentivized them to clear that marginal land and put it into open agricultural crop because soybeans were gold on the global market. That boom, there was a boom. And then now the pendulum swung the other way. Habitat's changed again. You know, my point being corn up north, corn down south, ducks unlimited, who, my gosh, I'll go to my grave believing they're the greatest because of what I saw working with them as a partner. When I worked for the federal government, I believe what Ducks Unlimited does, especially for the South in terms of creating wintering habitat on private and public lands, I believe they're one of the greatest conservation forces out here. And I don't care about anything else you heard or done. Let me tell you, I've seen it. What they did putting habitat on public ground today, when I worked with the federal government and partnered with them on this stuff, unbelievable. You know what I'm saying? But there is no smoking gun, in my opinion. Corn, whatever. There's no smoking gun on why you ain't killing ducks like your granddaddy did in that same blind. It could be a million different reasons. A million different reasons. You know what I'm saying? That are subject to some change year to year with migration. You know, it's just a stone cold fact. Look at the man, Bill Cooksey, boy, could speak, write a book on it. But look at the degradation of the Gulf Coast of Marsh, the lower delta, out there, vented all along Louisiana. That man, you want to talk about, you know, a football field sized piece of property, an hour disappearing of duck habitat, disappearing, an hour. How many millions upon millions of ducks did that historically overwinter? Well, now there's so little marsh grass buffer between the open gulf and the marsh proper that a good tropical storm kills all the duck food. I'm saying it's quiet years. You got all kinds of great food and habitat down there. How is that impacting the ducks we're killing in Mississippi and Arkansas? I guarantee it is. There's a million different reasons. Why, you know, and ducks are migratory. They're instinctive, you know, and how a duck knows fly 500 miles to the west because there's no habitat down here.
I'll close out with this point. I'll say this. The short-term people that are shouting the loudest about this, let me say this. The people that are shouting the loudest about this are thinking short term. I look at this from a long term perspective. If you think about the habitat loss that we've had just over, say, 30 years, just over 30 years, just 1989, you take that into consideration. And if you're still killing the duck, we should almost be thanking the private landowners around that are building habitat for them. Or the refuges that are holding some birds for us, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have crap. You're thinking short term. You're not thinking back long enough.
You know, in all fairness, you know, listening to your neighbor shoot ducks when you ain't is one of the most miserable situations on God's earth I've ever known. I mean, it is, you know what I'm talking about. You sitting in a duck blind, and you chipping away and you're not shooting nothing, and somewhere within earshot, somebody's having a party. That's kind of like watching HBO reruns while your roommate's making out with a pretty girl. It just ain't very fun. You know what I'm saying? And it ain't a good way to be. But it is what it is, Rocky. And you know, if duck holes, there are little X's on earth that I believe ducks will always fly no matter what. Parts of Tallahatchie County, parts of Arkansas, parts of Louisiana. You know what I'm saying? And then there's big voids that the stars got to line up anymore for them ducks to be there. And hey, you know, ducks have wings. They migrate. You know what? Put some gas in your tank and roll. Go find those ducks. That's the world we live in. You know what I'm saying? It's the world. There are little bitty, but there are blinds at my camp that I love, Rocky. I love to be there with my kids, with my friends. I love it. You know what? Sometimes there ain't no ducks there. We go to another blind. We go to another county. If you want to shoot ducks that day, that's just the way it is. You know, it's duck hunting. And I don't believe in talking to my daddy, who's been dead now for 11 years, or my granddaddy, looking at the pictures, the very few black and white pictures I've got from back in the day down in Washington County where they hunted. It's now in one of those refuge complexes. I don't believe they went out and shot duck limits every single day. I don't believe they did,
Rob. No.
Right.
I'm saying
it's duck hunting. They went out and they hunted because they were hunters and they had good times in the blind. And they took what nature and the good Lord gave them and their own skill set. They shot ducks. You know what I'm saying? But to what I would say, to anybody that's using divisive tactics and vitriol on the internet is you're part of the problem. Fractionalizing the hunt community, and we need to be pulled together because if we're going to be a political voice, we need to be together on this thing. It's very easy, Rocky, when you're sitting in a duck blind and your neighbor's killing ducks and you ain't, it's very easy to take it personal and it all become about me. See, we're all in this boat together. I've said it before. We're all in this boat together. No, we don't need to fractionalize the ranks. That's exactly what a very particular group is doing very divisively. We all got opinions. And, man, you know what? I'll tell you right now, I'm idealistic enough to listen to them. I may not like your idea. I may disagree. I can tell you this. I ain't about to even listen to it if I can help it. Depending on how it's presented. Let me just put it that way. We all got opinions. But you know what? Some opinions ain't worth a flip. They don't work. They've been scientifically disproved. What I tell anybody, you know, it's a multivariate reason that your duck hole or your region or your community or your state in any given year ain't shooting the number of ducks it normally does. You know, just remember, murders increase as churches increase. Those dead gum Baptists, no. There's more behind that than just that observation. Okay? That's just what I think.
You couldn't have put that any better in this podcast. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Thank you, Rocky.
Man, I enjoyed it. But I will say, hey, I will throw this last point in here. I will say, if you don't think that, and I'm not pointing this at you, and I can remember when I first started guiding, I went pretty much wherever I wanted to, knocked on doors. Now, there's a blind everywhere you drive. Every one of the old fields that I used to just, hey, man, here's a ham. Can I hunt that this year? Yep, go ahead. You know, it's a lot of places that didn't get used to hunt, but a couple of times a year, now somebody's got a blind and sitting up in it every day complaining because there's no ducks. Well, you know, even in the old days, we didn't kill ducks for 2 days a year.
Yeah.
That's when I went hunting them.
Ducks had to show up.
Cost me a ham. Yeah.
Jeff Foles said yesterday, you know, they killed ducks for 10 days out of the whole season. But it wasn't in the crop fields. They went out to some natural habitat and got on them, you know. And that's duck hunting, man. You got those days, remember, you got those days you don't. But you know what, baby? If your duck hunt life is so miserable that you need to act like I've seen some behavior online, Just again, take it for what it's worth. Take up golf. Go play golf. Take save that money and take your kids down to Disneyland. Go have fun, man. Life's too short. Go have fun.
I agree with you. One of the greatest things about having an opinion is being able to listen to somebody else's.
Yeah.
And think. And
y'all be good, Rocky. I enjoyed it, bud.
Ramsey, enjoyed it. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.